And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Oh, my goodness, is it Friday already? Yes, indeed, Johnny Donovan, it is that time. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and all of you at 77 WABC. Mr. Mayor, hello there.
You're pleased, John.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. Hello. Okay, as you can tell, the mayor is on the telephone, and he has been distracted with something else. Let's see if we can raise him again. Mr. Mayor, John Gambling, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, John?
I'm fine.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. You're distracted. You probably have a few other things going
on. I was just thinking about how to take credit for the fact that the rain seems to be stopping.
Okay.
And tomorrow it's going to be partly sunny and hit in the low 50s for the first St. Patrick's Day parade
of
the
year. Well, you know, I was going to bring that St. Patrick's Day parade stuff up again because I know each year this is not just one parade. It's like a month-long event.
Well, I always joke it's 4 weeks. I think actually it might be three, but maybe it's four. I got to check my schedule. The big one is obviously on Fifth Avenue on the 17th. But each of these parades are fun and a good chance in each borough to celebrate another group that's brought a lot to the city. The one tomorrow, I always wind up at somebody's house, the same people every year, who have a lot of Irish cheer is a nice way to phrase it. Great corned beef and cabbage, some Irish coffee, a few beers, and it's a good way to end the parade. Always have a good time there. And the parade is in Far Rockaway. It's a long parade with a lot of chance to see people and say Erin Go Brah. And, you know, you could question why O. Bloomberg is marching, but, you know, it's part of the city. I love
it. You never miss a parade. There's barely a parade you ever miss.
When I first was thinking about running for office, I asked Ed Koch what was good about being mayor and what was bad, and he said the best thing were parades. And so the first...
And it was all downhill from there.
Well, I said, he said that, and I, yeah, right. And then I marched in my first parade, I think it was the Israeli Day Parade, or a parade up Fifth Avenue, and afterwards I called him up and I said, you were right. It was great. People were waving and smiling and cheering, but you can tell how popular you are by who's willing to parade with you. There were, after we'd raised property taxes and all those bad things, and the city was going through some hard times, and my approval ratings were pretty low, it was lonely marching by myself. Today I get a big crowd. Everybody's
surrounding. I was going to say, Saturday the 17th, my guess is everybody will want to march with Michael Bloomberg.
Well, you know, Fifth Avenue is the granddaddy of them, and I try each year to march with all of the different uniformed services, police, fire, sanitation, corrections. The trouble is they march so close together that you can march from one end to the other with the first, probably only half the parade with the second. By the time you get to the third or the fourth group, there's only a couple blocks left, but it's always fun.
All right, time to get the green sweater.
And I might point out, something's different. In the olden days, these parades, a lot of them had problems with drinking in the streets and that sort of thing. Today, there's no rowdyism, there's no alcohol, the police do a spectacular job, and I would just urge everybody this season, not just for St. Patrick's Day, but all through the parade season, which goes basically from now to Thanksgiving, these are fun. And they're safe, and you can be out there, and people are respectful of each other, and that's true not just in Fifth Avenue. That's true throughout the whole city.
All right, let's get to some things other than the parades here. Let's talk about, first of all, money. We go to the bank again. That seems to be obviously one of the major things paying for all of this. The new comptroller, Mr. DiNapoli, suggests that the 2008 budget will have another $3.1 billion surplus. You buy into that?
Well, our numbers are slightly different, but I think the thing that I took most heartening from his report, and remember, he has the same staff that his predecessor had. It's really the staff that's doing all the work. But Alan Hevesy always said nice things about the city's prudence and judgment, and Mr. DiNapoli seems to be saying the same thing, and that's very comforting. In the end, our job is to provide the services the public needs and to make sure that we do so in a way is that we can continue to provide them and the city doesn't get in trouble the way it did in the 70s. And that's why we've put money aside. Our estimates are somewhat the same, but it all depends on how, number one, the projections. Nobody knows if the revenue is going to be there. And number two, the state budget could be problematic if the state budget takes away monies that we had counted on, monies that were promised in the past, then we'd have a much more difficult time. But what I've got to do is try to make sure that we have money put aside to pay for medical benefits that we promised our municipal employees. We have roughly a $50 billion unfunded liability. We know that we're going to have deficits down the road. We think they'll occur maybe in probably in 2009 and in 2010. People that say, oh, you always talk about deficits and they never arrive, they should go back and remember what happened to us in 2002. We had a $6.5 billion, $5.5 something like that, billion-dollar deficit, same thing in 2003, and it was painful. We had to cut back and raise taxes, and nobody likes any of those things, but in the end, that was what was needed to keep this city safe and clean and exciting, and so businesses started to grow again, and people moved here, and our tax base is better, and I'm optimistic. But, you know, you look at the stock market this week, very volatile. I don't know whether it's going up or down, but you can't just say automatically our pension funds are going to make a lot of money in the stock market. It may be they don't, and since we have defined benefit plans, we would have to put in more money if the stock market were to go down.
Do you think DiNapoli is kind of sending a message here that the state might be giving you less money than you had asked for because he thinks you're going to have a surplus?
I think he's only been in office for a week or two, so I don't think that, you know, he's at that level, and that's not his job. His job is to look at the job we do and, you know, see whether it's prudent or not. And he gets a chance every year. There is a meeting at the governor's office where the controller of both the state and the controller of the city, Bill Thompson, who's really done a very good job, Billy Thompson has, they look and they opine based on their professional judgment as to whether we're acting prudently. And I hope that Controller DiNapoli will find, as Controller Hevesy found, that, and Billy Thompson seems to have found every time, that we are doing a good job and we are acting responsibly.
All right. Well, let me do the same for my end of things. I need to take a break right here, make some money for the company. Mr. Mayor, sit tight. We'll be right back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. Back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling and you at 77 WABC. Mr. Mayor, the Staten Island ferry tragedy continues to make news here. Federal Judge Edward Corman concluded this week that the city was negligent because it did not enforce a two-pilot rule and therefore not entitled to cap the liabilities. I understand the city has paid out some $27 million already. There is still more to go. Are you going to appeal this?
We're looking at it, trying to decide whether we'd have a case to appeal it. You know, we've made settlements with an awful lot of the people who were injured and family members of those who died. In the end, that's what's likely to happen. These things tend not to go to trial, and when they go to trial, they're very risky because people that feel injured or were injured don't get the kind of settlements that the tort lawyers promise them. But I think what we have to do here, John, is protect the city and try to keep our liability as little as possible. It's the taxpayers' money, and we have an obligation legally to do that. And also to make sure that those who were injured get compensation to pay for recovery. You know, nobody did this deliberately, and I don't know what the courts will eventually decide in terms of liability. In retrospect, it's always easy to go back and say you should have done this, should have done that. The Staten Island Ferry has been delivering a great service for 70 plus years, maybe even more than that, and we continue to try to make it safer. And funny thing is, I'm up at Gracie Mansion this morning. I had a breakfast with the press secretaries for all of the different agencies, and it was, how do you get out a message to the public that we were talking about this morning? Because the public should have a right, has a right to know, and should know how city government is handling their interests. And here's a case where, on one hand, you have an obligation to keep the city's expenses as low as possible, and on the other hand, you want to be as compassionate as you can be, and sometimes those two things go in opposite directions.
I think many New Yorkers forget sometimes or are not aware that the city does not have an insurance policy. They self-insure against these sort of things. So when you read about stories of awards from the city to somebody that has been wronged or injured or whatever it might be, that is coming directly out of the treasury and the bottom line.
Keep in mind, if we bought public insurance, it would cost us even more.
Right.
I mean, the fact of the matter is the city is self-insured because it's so big, it might as well just run the risks. Why pay somebody else to settle all these claims and to make a profit? Let's just pay the claims ourselves. We've actually done a pretty good job of reducing claims. This year, over the last 3 years, I think it is, we've something like 14%. We've saved something like $80 or $90 million. And the number of suits that we have backlog, is we've cut them in half. I think there was something like 60,000 before, and now we're down to something like 30,000 in backlog of suits. The number of suits filed have been decreasing each year. And we tried to work hard to reduce the risk so that people don't have a reason to sue us. But, some of these things, they cost a lot of money, and everybody says, oh, it's nobody's money, it's the city's money. Well, if it's the city's money, my attitude is it's everybody's money. And our corporation council really has done a good job. And once again, the controller, Billy Thompson, deserves some credit because he has to approve settlements. And sometimes it's easier and cheaper and makes more sense when you know you're going to lose the case to make a settlement early in the process. And then city council, incidentally, deserves some credit, too. They passed a law that changes liability when you trip on the sidewalk with the commercial and multifamily buildings from the city to the owner. And I think that's saved us probably about $40 million a year.
I'm just thinking, does the city have a bank account in some bank? I mean, like I do, like you do?
Sure. Somebody has to. We have lots of bank accounts. The city, the city collects $35 billion in taxes, and those checks come in from people. Some people come up with cash, but we collect money, and we get money from the federal government, and we write checks to our suppliers, and we give paychecks out, and we deal with the banking system, and we deal with all the banks.
All right, but I mean, you just don't have it in one bank. It's spread around,
you
as far as you know.
Sure. Prudence says that you should spread it around, and we do exactly that.
Yeah, right. Speaking of money, you've made a couple of trips. Schumer, Clinton, you've talked to them a bunch of times about Homeland Security money. What is this that I hear that the city could be short $350 million under a new proposal coming out of Washington?
The battle's not over, and as somebody said, why don't you yell and scream, well, we've got to deal with the same thing next year. But the truth of the matter is Homeland Security money should be going to where there's a big risk of somebody attacking us, and that's New York and Washington and a couple of other cities. And agricultural money is my example, should go to places where they farm, and that's not New York City. So I'll give up agricultural money if the other places will give up Homeland Security money. If the federal government wants to spread money around, that's fine, but don't call it Homeland Security money.
Senate, the Senate's really the problem here. I mean, the House has actually worked in our favor,
I mean, the administration has most times been in our favor. Michael Chertoff has most times been in our favor, not every time in all these cases. But they all play a game of I'm in favor of this as long as it never happens. They can say to the other guy, well, I didn't hurt you. I was just doing it for political reasons. I think it gets back to all this partisanship in Washington. That's, I've been screaming about this for a long time. Everybody's trying to bring home the bacon for their constituents, whether their constituents deserve it or not, because that's the way they get support, and they're all worried about getting reelected and raising money for the next campaign.
In most of the conversations I have on virtually every subject, we somehow always seem to return to exactly that point, the partisanship in Washington and the absolute stagnation of our politic here in the United States. You got any good ideas? Because nobody's budging.
Well, to some extent, a cynic would say it's good that they can't do anything because what they do isn't good.
I understand that, but that only goes so far.
Look, I think, in all fairness to Congress, they do some things very well and that we should say thank you for. And then there are things that they just get tied up in trying to get political advantage. We find ourselves in a situation today where I think it's probably safe to say George Bush could come out from motherhood and apple pie, and people would say, oh, it's Bush's thing, and they vote against it. Now, you know, I don't agree with George W. Bush on everything. I don't disagree with him on everything. It seems to me you got to look at each thing and see if it makes sense. That's fine. And I will say I also respect people that at least try to come up with solutions to problems that we have. And I've said this publicly, Massachusetts, you know, Mitt Romney tried to do something with health care. Hillary Clinton tried to do something with health care. There are a number of programs. Schwarzenegger is trying to do something with health care. We have an enormous problem in this country that we want care and we don't want to or can't afford to pay for it. And at least these people, George Bush has a health care plan. At least they are trying to do something rather than just saying no, no, no. And too many people say, I want change, but not that change. I want a perfect change or no change. And that's really just another way of ensuring that we have stagnation and that nothing gets done. It's, you know, almost like trying to have it both ways. I voted for the war, but I didn't vote to fund it. Okay, I mean, you know, we need to make progress here. We need to have Congress working together, both parties, working with the administration, working with state and local governments.
Doesn't it get back to leadership, though, of both sides of the House, both sides of the aisle, of saying, okay, we're going to not stagnate now. We're going to see if we can actually do some business for the people?
I think that's fair to say leadership matters. I certainly am a believer in that. I also, however, think that individual members of anybody can stand up and say, I'm not going to go along with this. I believe in something different. John McCain is a good example. He believes in the war. You can disagree with him, but I don't think there's any question that this is a guy who is speaking from his heart. And you know, it's probably not been very good for him in the in his quest to become president. But it's what I've always respected about John McCain. He's a principled guy. Whether I don't agree with a lot of his programs, but certainly respect him for that. And I think we need more of that kind of courage.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we made it to the half hour. Let me take another break right here, and we will continue right back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Don't forget your phone calls and questions, 1-800-848-WABC, before we finish up. Babita Hariani's got more news. Babita? Friday John Gambling Show means we've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg with us. Mr. Mayor, congratulations on that Pathfinder Award that you're going to get up at Harvard today.
Well, thank you very much. It's going to be nice, and I'm going to take my mother out to dinner tonight.
Very good.
She will have a big steak, and I'll probably have a little piece of fish, since I'm watching my wife's line, and she never seems to have to worry about it.
Isn't that nice? So when you don't
fair,
have to watch
John.
It.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't know. The technology in government, are we still underutilized? Is government still underutilizing technology, or are there limitations?
I think that there are lots of things that we can do better and more technology. Government sometimes is slow because, number one, it's big, and it's hard to make changes in big organizations. New, young organizations can do it because they don't have the history and the existing systems and don't have to train a lot of people in new things. They learn it the first time with the new technology. Also, government typically, for arguably some good reasons, has procurement procedures which take a long time. And unfortunately, in this city, we also, and in this country too, we seem to have a case where whoever is selling technology, if they lose, they then sue to stop things, arguing the process wasn't fair. And that's one of the things that slows down an awful lot of stuff. You look at the federal government trying to buy new airplanes, and with us with street furniture, where it took decades to get new a handful of toilets and new the kiosks to sell newspapers. And, you know, why should these things take so long? Well, we live in a litigious world.
Yeah, all right. Well, congratulations. Have some fun up in Boston later on this afternoon. This week, the Administration for Child Services had an induction of new caseworkers, which you presided over, and you were looking for the state to come through with the wherewithal for these people to do criminal background checks on parents. Shelley Silver said, absolutely not. Not going to happen.
Well, you know, I've talked to the speaker, and I have hopes that I can convince him that this is a good idea, but you know, that's my job to convince the speaker, and he's somebody that, you know, I've worked with now for 5 or 6 years, and I've always found him, you know, if you can make your case, you can convince Shelley, and I'm going to try to do that. What we're talking about here is caseworkers who come into a household want to know whether the parents or boyfriends, girlfriends, whoever lives in the house, have criminal records, and the issue is who should have the right to look at criminal records. And some people say, well, only the police. But if you take a look in this state, our Department of Insurance, State Department of Health, the medical inspector, there's a temporary state commission of investigation, the banking department, the Onondaga County Center for Forensic Science Laboratories can all look at rap sheets without asking anybody. And then there's a whole bunch who can request them. And ACS isn't even allowed to request them. The Athletic Commission, because they issue boxing licenses, they can ask for rap sheets. The Insurance Department, Department of Taxation, Westchester County Solid Waste Commission. My recollection is the State Racing and Wagering Board can look at rap sheets. They can look at rap sheets as anybody when they're... if they want to, anybody selling bingo equipment or supplies, they can ask for it. So there's a long history here. A lot of people can look at rap sheets. And to, you know, our children are our most vulnerable. And to leave them in a household, a caseworker's got to decide, are they safe? Well, if, you know, one of the adults living in that household is a serial axe murderer, to keep the case officer from being able to see and then ask them to make a decision as to whether or not the child should be removed from the house, which you really don't want to do if you can avoid it, or leave them there. Mistakes are going to be made. Kids are going to die. And I think, you know, it's my job to explain to the state legislature, and I'm hopeful that I can. Also, I want to make sure that our caseworkers, of which half a dozen are assaulted every year, are protected. If you assault a caseworker, it's not a felony, but that if you assault lots of other city employees, it is. And, you know, I shook hands with all 190-odd new caseworkers, and what struck me is they're all bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, want to help really make a difference to children, and they're all young, and they're going to go into some of the toughest households.
I was going to say, this is as tough a job as there is in the city.
Absolutely, and you know, it's one of these jobs, if you make a mistake, the press wants to vilify you, but how do you know? If you can't get the information, and you do need the physical protection, I mean, to let somebody assault one of our caseworkers and then not have that be a felony, I think is just not tolerable. And so I'm going to try to work with the state legislature on that. But I don't think you should. Somebody asked me who is responsible for the situation where the kids, we can't protect the kids because we can't look at the rap sheets, or we can't protect our city employees, ACS workers. And they wanted to blame somebody in Albany or someplace else. And I said, just blame all of us. You, me, everybody else. Why have we allowed this to go on, and we shouldn't allow it to go on?
Well, it's been on the speaker's desk now since 2004.
Well, I'm going to.
That's a long time.
I'm going to take another stab at it. I think that in the end, I can convince the state legislature and its leadership that this is the right thing to do, and stand next to them with an agreement that will protect our kids and the people that are trying to work to make our kids safe.
Your point guard in the school system, Joel Klein, was in Albany this week, and he was really taking some heat up there from people saying they're playing with numbers and the schools aren't nearly as good as he and you claim they are.
I don't know if they're nearly as good as he and I claim they are. I can tell you this. Nobody, no rational person thinks they aren't a heck of a lot better. And there's been Joel Klein and all of the people, 120,000 people that work in the Department of Education, really have started to focus in the last 5 years on our kids. They've focused on trying to reduce expenses and put the monies from, move the monies from bureaucracy into the classroom where they belong. They've been willing to try new things. And graduation rates are higher now than they've been in an awful long time. The gap between different ethnicities and how well they test in English and math has started to be reduced. Crime is down. It's still there, sure. Do we have a long ways to go in every things? Absolutely. But anybody that wants to stand up and say, I'm going to vote against children, is going to have to bear the responsibility of their irresponsible comments. And you know, we have funded different schools differently. That's unconscionable. We've written off a whole bunch of our kids and said they're uneducatable and we're not going to do anything. That's unconscionable. We've tried in the past. Remember, before 5 or 6 years ago, if you wanted to move your kid to a better school, you called your local elected official. And if you were a supporter of them, they got them moved. That's not a fair thing to do. We centralized that and stopped that kind of corruption. In the past, if an elected official wanted to get a no-show job for somebody, you know, the Department of the old Board of Ed was just rife with all of this. And today we really are making a difference. And, you know, I don't want to go back and criticize anybody in the past. I just want to take us forward. And if people don't want to continue these reforms, then you know, they better explain to the parents why why the schools were starting to get better and they turned it back. It would be a very tragic thing. And the fascinating thing, John, is throughout this country, New York City school system has become the poster child for what to do. It's only here in our city, with some of the naysayers whose vested interests are being hurt, who are against it. But if you look around this country, people say, you know, this is great. And today we have 70,000, this last year we had 70,000 applicants from around the country for young people who wanted to come and teach in our public school system. They know that we're going in the right direction.
All right, one group that has been making some noise right from the beginning of the changes, the good changes that you've made, is the parents. The parents that were involved in the past system that you just described, and new parents that are obviously coming through. To that point, you just made a new appointment this week.
Yeah, we appointed a woman who's really smart and has been the Brooklyn Borough President Marty Markowitz's representative on our Committee for Educational Policy, Martine Guerrier, and she has she hasn't always agreed with the administration, but she's really smart, and I think she will help continue the progress that we've made in giving parents real ability to know what's going on, and the teachers' real ability to get their message out to the parents. You know, the parents have the major responsibility to educate our kids. The teachers only have the kids 5 days a week and for 5 hours a day for 25 weeks a year, whatever the numbers are, or something like that. The parents have them virtually all the time. And I don't think the teachers should be telling the parents what to do at home, but the teachers have to tell the parents what they see in their child so that the parents can work with their child. And it works in both directions. The parent should be able to get the message to the teacher of what they see at home and what the kids tell them at night. And, you know, we have the greatest teachers, 80,000 teachers who are just spectacular. They're well-trained, and they really care, and they're well-led with great principles, and we want them to run their classrooms and look each child eye to eye, eyeball to eyeball, and find out what that child needs and provide the services. And the parent coordinators are the first line of establishing that communications, and Martine will work with them. And so it really, we are going in the right direction.
Real fast before we go to the break and get to our phone calls after that break, break, taxi drivers are saying, hey, we don't like this GPS, credit card readers, we might go on strike.
Well, they're not going to strike, I assume, and that was the deal. They got a big raise in return for agreeing to do that, and they wouldn't have gotten the raise if they didn't do that. They get the raise because they've got to provide a better service, and there's a handful of hotheads who'll yell and scream. But, you know, it's a tough job. You work very hard. They weren't making a lot of money, and so we agreed to give them a raise. But also, we have a responsibility to give a better service to the public. Paying with credit cards, actually, studies show, would lead to bigger tips for the cab drivers. They should love that, but it's a convenience to the public. Having GPS, so the public knows what route they're going. Why shouldn't the public know what the most direct route is and have a... They're paying for it.
Of course. And we've all been on rides where we haven't gone the most direct route.
Well, there's that allegation, John. I don't know that.
I can tell you from experience it actually happened to me. Maybe I was the only one that it ever happened
That's
to.
That's true.
Be as it may. Stick around, Mr. Mayor. We've got some folks have some questions for you. We will do that as we continue at 77 WABC. All right, we continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and it's your turn to ask the questions. 1-800-848-WABC. We're going to go to Rob over in New Jersey for the first question of Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Rob, go.
Hi, God. Mayor Bloomberg, how are you today?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I was wondering, I live in New Jersey, and I drive every day to the Bronx, and I always drive to the city all the time. I see that the lights are always 24 hours on all the bridges, and... the lights are on the FDR everywhere.
Well, the big bridges, the lights we turn off sometime around 1 o'clock in the morning, I think. They do get turned off. And actually, during the fiscal crisis, we had some private companies that paid the electricity bill for the lights over the East River bridges, which are city bridges. The George Washington is a state authority bridge. But, you know, on the East River Drive, people are out there running late at night, walking late at night. They need light so that they can be safe and see where they're going. And we just live in a 24-hour-a-day city. You know, if there's nobody there, we can't turn the lights on and off depending on somebody's walking at that point in time. But we are very conscious of the cost of electricity, and we have to balance that with the image of the city as being a place where it's safe and looks interesting, and we try to do that.
All right, Brendan in Brooklyn, you've got the mayor's ear. Go, because we're short on time. Real fast, right to the question.
I would love to help you, stand with you, Mayor Bloomberg, and help ACS workers get the protection they deserve. And I'd like to know what you'd like us as listeners to do.
Call your state assembly and senator, state assembly people and senators, and tell them that we need this protection. You know, somebody suggested that the city council could do it, but it's not a city law. These are criminal things that it's up to the state legislature. But I'm optimistic that I can convince the state legislature based on the facts. And, you know, people sometimes criticize the leader of the assembly and the leader of the Senate. In my experience over the last 5 years is most times, not all in all fairness, but most times when I've been able to make a case to them, they've listened and given us a fair hearing, and if they think we're right, they've come through for us, and we're beneficiaries because of it. So.
Mr. Mayor, you've got to get yourself to Boston and to Harvard, and we've got to move on, and we will talk next Friday.
Looking forward to it, John. All the best.
March well in that St. Patrick's Day parade this weekend and all to come. We're marching. We continue to step off here. Chris Wallace from Fox News Sunday joining us, you too, as we continue at 77 W.